This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tea Clinic. One visit can change your life. Men's Tea Clinic offers a variety of men's wellness programs to help you meet your goals and keep you as strong as you've ever been. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEA today or visit menstclinic.com. That's menstclinic.com.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Do you think the Cowboys' prospects for this season are just kind of boring? But in the meantime, I want to bring this up. This is from College Football's Reddit. Somebody has filed a lawsuit on behalf of themselves and Shedeur Sanders against the NFL.
For why?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I will read you the complaint. They would like a retraction of slanderous statements made about Shedeur Sanders, along with an apology for any harm caused to his reputation as he fell throughout the draft. They would like implementations of fairer practices in the drafting process to ensure the talented players are recognized and given opportunities based on merit. Furthermore,
Roger Fairer practices.
They would like punitive damages in the amount of $100 million
of course,
for the harm caused to the plaintiff and the impact of the NFL's actions on his emotional well-being. And any additional remedies that the court deems appropriate, including compensatory damages.
So this is a person with this complaint on behalf of both of them.
Correct. Because they want the court to take appropriate action to address the intentional emotional distress and trauma suffered as a result of the NFL's collective practices and the harmful statements made regarding Shedeur Sanders and his fall in the draft.
This is the dumbest thing I've heard in a long time. I mean, I've heard a lot of dumb things.
Sure.
Said a lot of dumb things.
Sure.
This doesn't... Shedeur didn't ask for this.
All right,
so just his name being attached to this in general is ridiculous. But, all right, man. Hey, look, man. Dumber things have gone through in courts.
Yeah, that actually is fair. Now, speaking of dumber things, I'm going to give Alec Medford a chance to address this individual first. We're about to play a few cuts from Andrew Brandt, and I'm not saying that I always, Kyle Brandt, and I'm not saying I agree with all of these things, but I do happen to agree with a bulk of what he's saying about just the Cowboys' upcoming season. But Alec, do you have thoughts about Kyle Brandt?
Yeah, I just think he's probably the biggest hypocrite in national football media because I think it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago, he went on this epic rant that got thousands and thousands of retweets and Instagram posts and probably got played on this very station about how he's tired of the Cowboys getting forced into relevancy. The only time I ever see any of his content getting clicks is when he's talking about the Dallas Cowboys.
I could see that.
Years removed from that situation. So, Mr. I'm tired of the Cowboys. I don't want to talk about them. The only time he talks about them is whenever he's reacting live on air to you guys' conversations with Jerry Jones, with Stephen Jones. He gets his content from us about the Cowboys, but he hates it so much. Even though it gets him thousands of retweets, he can't stand it. And we're about to prove my point here. This is incredible timing.
It was a rant, that's for sure.
I am going to prove the point, Alec. I'm sorry for bringing this up. But I will say, in this instance, and I don't think it's particularly that much of a hot take, I kind of agree with a lot of what he's saying. So let's go to Kyle Brandt specifically. So we broke this up into three parts. Let's go to cut number 9, please.
They are by far the least interesting team in their division. By far. 4th out of 4. And I don't know if that's ever been true in my entire life. Even the Dave Campo era had more sizzle than this team does. Even smaller market teams right now are headlights and neon compared to America's team. The Titans are way more interesting. The Jaguars are way more interesting. The Dallas Cowboys coaching hire was not a bold choice. It was sensible. The Dallas Cowboys first round draft pick was not a bold choice. It was practical. The not paying Micah storyline is a rerun of an episode we've seen 10 times from this team. The quarterback is the quarterback. He'll be very good, not great. Say the right things and get paid, and we'll do it again next year. The most interesting thing that has happened in the last calendar year for the Dallas Cowboys, and I don't even think it's close, is the owner's breathtaking cameo in a television show called Landman.
All right. So, and this is the part, and I know people are going to get frustrated, and Alec, I don't agree with the, I don't disagree with the rest of what you're saying, but when it comes to this, I kind of think he's mostly right.
About
just the boring nature of the Cowboys heading into this season, depending on what you think. Like, I don't particularly think they're primed
nothing
to
splashy
compete
happened with the
in the playoffs or anything like
yeah,
that.
Nothing splashy,
I hope I'm wrong.
Nothing splashy happened with them. I don't think they're the fourth in intrigue in this division. I mean, I guess the Giants have intrigue because
yeah,
they're chaos. The Cowboys, however, did fall to third. You know, any interest in that yeah. division for sure.
Yeah.
Because Washington got a quarterback that everybody's excited about.
Yep.
They have ownership that people are excited about. Now they have the new stadium that they're yep. So there's a lot going on
drafting,
there. And the
yeah.
freaking Eagles well, just won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going on there. The draft for the Cowboys just had. Oh, yeah. I guess the draft in D.C. also. The draft the Cowboys just had. Nothing really truly splashy there.
Which doesn't mean it's a bad thing.
No,
like,
not at yeah. all. Not at all. I think they made an excellent pick in Booker. I think that they made two really good picks in the second and third round as well. And we'll see about the rest of the draft from there. But I think the first three picks were picks that make your team good. Okay. I'm not going to say they make your team better, but they make your team good.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to what they can do. But again, nothing sexy about it, which is very weird for a Jerry Jones type team. The offseason free agency, nothing sexy yeah. about it. Although they added players that I think are going to be helpful yeah. to this team. So in the grand scheme of things, the Cowboys did what we've been begging them to do during the offseason, and that is stop caring about all the other things and just build a good, talented roster.
Because wouldn't you love for this team to bore everyone to death on yes. their way to finishing 12-5 and actually doing something in the playoffs?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, the Eagles bored me last year,
yeah.
and they won a Super Bowl, and I was yeah. like, dang, dude.
Now, he wasn't done, because here's the comparison. Go to cut number 10. Do you think the Cowboys are like this?
They are currently like the Tupperware of teams.
Ooh,
it's
ooh.
Just something you have. You don't think about it. You don't care about it. You put the spaghetti in. You put it in the fridge. You have no attachment to it at all. It just serves a practical need of being one of the teams in the NFC East.
Good. Again, Jerry, don't respond to this. This is all I'm asking you. Don't go.
Unless you want to do it on our show.
You know what, guys?
Then call in right now.
You know what we need to go do? We need to make some trades right now. You know, don't get yeah. into this like he's bright. No, this is actually a fantastic offseason if you want to make a statement during the regular season. Because Kevin, I feel this way very strongly. There are seasons when we think the Cowboys are going to be very, very good.
Yes.
And then they turn out to be very, very bad. And there are seasons when we think they're going to be very, very bad. And they turn out to be good. And we're like, what the hell's happening with this team? And more than anything, I would like to stay neutral in the whole thing, but win football games. Now, do I think that they have the talent to do that this year? No, not yet. Do
yeah.
I think that they're building on the talent to do that in a couple of years? Yes, I do think that. But what he's trying to bait the Cowboys into that conversation of saying, hey, we got to do something sexy. Otherwise, we're going to lose intrigue. You're not going to lose intrigue from the rest of the country and from Cowboys fans.
Which is interesting.
Although you did lose some interest with the Cowboys fans because this year, it did seem like there was a little more combativeness to the idea.
They weren't good enough.
Yeah.
yeah. From the 9-0-3, the goal is to not be the most interesting. The goal is to win games, and you can be boring if that's how it happens. Now, I got one more just for Alec. Let's go ahead and go to cut number 11, Kyle Brandt, finishing it up.
I think the Cowboys fans themselves are passing the time grumbling about number two receivers, cursing Jaden Daniels, hoping Jackson Dart isn't as good as he is, and praying that the Eagles are gentle this year because they weren't last year. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying. I'm not feeling anything negative about the Cowboys. I just feel numb. I feel nothing. And I dare you to find me you feel anything at all.
Okay.
There are some parts in that I agree with as well about all the griping about the number two receiver, because then there's a whole bunch of people every time we bring up suggestions, they're like, who cares? Dak will never get him the ball.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. And look, I agree. I hope Jaden Daniels isn't as good as he was last year. I hope Jackson Dart is not good. And I hope the Philadelphia Eagles fall off a cliff.
Yeah.
I agree with all of that.
I'm not hoping that the Eagles are gentle by any means. I do think that we are kind of stuck in this idea of we hope the Cowboys, the people at the top, can make better decisions to drive this thing further, that they can motivate the players to be at an elite level, even though, like, again, I still don't think their talent level is elite right now. I think their talent level has a lot of work to do. And I would like to be more passionate about this team right now. I would like to be more excited about this team. However, I think when you say numb, the idea that we've been excited about this team at times and then got it thrown back in our face that they aren't that good, we're kind of jaded.
Yeah.
We're to the point where we're kind of protective of ourselves as Cowboy fans because we don't want them to let us down and have our hearts broken that way.
Now, if we have just a quick second, I wanted to throw this out there because maybe it gives you an opportunity for hope. The New York Islanders won the NHL draft lottery. All right. So you might not care about that, but consider this. Entering the day, the New York Islanders only had the 10th best odds of winning the NHL draft lottery. The reason why I bring that up is the Dallas Mavericks have the 11th best odds of winning the NBA draft lottery. So if the NHL can pick the 10th team, why can't the NBA pick the 11th team so we can get Cooper Flagg?
Is that who you really want?
Yes.
Look at this. Look at the way that this team is currently constructed.
We'll trade him for Kevin Durant.
No, probably. We don't
trust
have a clue.
In Nico.
Yeah, he's said. Well, I think he said Miko there. I think trust in Miko is what he really meant to say.
Okay.
Does he fit on this team the way it's currently constructed?
Yeah, I definitely think he does because he's not like
a Najee role.
Yeah, and he'll be great on the wing. Like, I think he'll be phenomenal on the wing. I think he'll be a really good defender on the wing. I think he would fit perfectly on the team. Now, I understand the concern is then, like, who is running your offense? And I would not want that to be Cooper Flagg on a consistent basis. But as a player out on the wing, I would freaking love that. But also, I need to point out that in the history of the NBA draft lottery, the Mavericks have never moved up.
Yeah.
So...
unless they traded to get Luka, because they were...
I strictly mean, yes, I strictly mean from the sense of moving up, like with the ping pong balls.
How do you get do you weight the ping pong ball or is it frozen? How do we do this one?
So with that, all I know is the story that I remember, and the draft lottery is on Monday for the NBA. All I remember was the theory that I'd probably believe in is when they just used to pick the envelopes that they froze the New York Knicks envelope. I don't know. I just said it differently. So they could get Patrick Ewing.
Yeah.
So
freeze a ping pong ball or something.
Maybe.
How do we do this?
Isn't there a terrible John Travolta, Lisa Kudrow movie about rigging the ping pong lottery?
Or something like that.
Something like that.
I never saw it, but I heard about it.
It's not good. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, we'll move into the expressway where we got our Nelly ticket giveaway. Also, after a grueling first round series, just how far can these stars go? And Matt Hicks, all of it next right here on The Fan. KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. We'll have our Nelly ticket giveaway in this segment. We'll talk more about the stars, but right now, we bring to you Texas Rangers broadcaster and the man who I like to think might still hate the 8-person bullpen. It is Matt Hicks. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, fellas.
Matt, he asked me yesterday if he said that, would you remember? Do you remember that conversation? I think it was at Goodyear in Surprise one year where you were not a fan of the 8-person bullpen.
Yeah, I don't know as though I recall that. But in general, if you throw me into the old school camp, I'm definitely of that way of thinking. You know, I can remember, you know, growing up and watching the Senators early on. You know, growing up in the D.C. suburbs and then later rooting for the Orioles in the late 70s and early 80s when you may have had a total of 15 or 16 guys pitch for you all season. And sometimes even a lower number than that. So you only had, you know, a few guys that you knew were reliable ever coming out of the bullpen, and they would, you know, appear in 70 or 80 some games, and somehow crazily their arms never got tired, or if they did, they didn't tell anybody and they still pitched. So,
well, as soon as we wrap up this interview, I'm going to try to convince you to stay on the line and talk to Alec real quick so he can repeat to you exactly what you said back in the day, because I thought it was freaking amazing. But we don't have to bring that up right now.
That's for another day, yeah.
Now, the Rangers, with the recall of Evan Carter, obviously getting Corey Seager back, getting Wyatt Langford back, switching your hitting coach or co-hitting coach, offensive coordinator, I don't think anyone can argue that in the midst of this offensive slump, the Rangers have just sat around and waited for it to turn around.
No, and even before the moves on Sunday, I don't think, you know, you couldn't characterize it as just sitting around hoping that magically everybody would start to hit. You know, there's a lot of work that goes on a daily basis. And you know, and there are some guys, obviously, that aren't necessarily struggling. But I think you can say collectively as a team, they have definitely struggled with slug. And when that's how you were designed, it's how, you know, Chris Young went about helping to build this team. And in the offseason, you know, the acquisitions of Jock Peterson and Jake Berger, this was a team that wasn't necessarily going to hit for batting average. It wasn't going to be running wild on the bases. This was supposed to be a team that was going to hit 2 to 3 home runs a ball game, preferably with men on base when that happened. And we were supposed to bludgeon people on a regular basis.
Yeah.
And that just hasn't happened this year. So when you get into this kind of rut, everybody feels like they need to do more to help get you out of the rut. So there has been, I think, a very concentrated effort on everyone's part to do more and to be better, and it just hasn't paid off yet. Now, you have some guys that are hitting the ball well right now, and, you know, a Josh Smith, a Jonah Heim, Wyatt Langford has kind of been a little bit up and down, and, of course, we haven't had Corey in the lineup, but those guys seem to be comfortable at the plate, but I don't know as though as a unit that you can get it all done and score 6, 7, 8 runs a ball game with only 3 or 4 guys contributing. You really need everybody to help out. And, you know, in Leody's case, you know, he was hitting at the bottom of the order, and we thought maybe at spring training we saw a different Leody, because remember, he hit 4 home runs during the spring. Looked like he had altered, you know, his approach and his swing at the plate, and we're like, oh, Leody might just be turning a corner here and be a slightly different player than he's been in the past. But that really hasn't happened. And when you take a look at his numbers this year, all of his numbers are down from what his career average has been. So he just wasn't getting on base with the kind of regularity that the club needed. And so in getting Evan Carter, you know, Evan apparently is fully healthy, not really tearing the cover off the ball down in AAA. I think he was hitting about 220, but at least he was getting on base. He had popped a few home runs, and maybe he can be an additional spark, you know, to help get this offense going.
Now, to go along with that, you'd mentioned Josh Smith, and I want to go back to this. I know how it's logical that you put Evan Carter in center field and all of that. What do you think about, like, the prospects of Josh Smith in center field on a more consistent basis?
Well, I think with Josh, I mean, you're talking about what baseball has been for the last maybe 25, 30 years, and that is he's a guy who is so versatile in the field that it doesn't really matter where he plays. You just need his bat in the lineup. And so if Evan ends up seeing a pretty good chunk of time in center field, fine. But I don't know as though Evan's going to play against lefties, because right now, I mean, given these moves, the philosophy of the ball club, and you'll pardon me for saying this, but I think it's damn the torpedoes full speed ahead.
I like that.
Pun intended. Mm-hmm. A few weeks ago, we were talking about everybody with torpedo bats. We had a few guys trying it out, but it's not really clicked with anybody on our ball club. But you have to win. And so Evan Carter's development as an everyday player is taking a back seat now to Evan can come up and help us win right now against right-handed starting pitching, not necessarily when a lefty is on the mound for the other club. So when a lefty is on the mound for the other club, then I think you'll probably see Josh Smith in center field. But, you know, expect to see Josh in the lineup every day, regardless of where that is. because he can play so many different positions and not just be versatile, but play them well, that everything right now is designed to win on a nightly basis.
Matt Hicks joining us here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. Have you gotten a chance to talk to Brett Boone yet or hear him talk?
Well, I have not gotten a chance to talk to Brett Boone. I was actually out and about in the suburbs of Boston yesterday.
Gotcha.
When all of this was going on, and I have not seen him in the hotel today, although I did watch a little bit of his podcast from yesterday. I don't know if you guys saw
that. We did.
And, you know, the connection with Michael Young and how these conversations got started and how much he reveres Bruce Bochy. I don't know anything at all about Brett Boone's hitting philosophy and how, if in discussions with Boch and with CY, that, you know, they liked what they heard and, you know, that this is exactly what they want. Now, I don't know what that is we're getting, but one of the things that CY referenced yesterday was modern day hitting.
Yes.
So, you know, I think that we're still going to have the philosophy of guys getting off their A swing and trying to slug even with two strikes in the count, probably. But how that all plays out, getting the message from a different individual, remains to be seen.
Yeah, I guess that was my kind of my other part of that question was, what was Donnie Ecker's entire approach that, or maybe just what it was it about his voice that got a little stale or complacent with the team?
You know what? I really don't know, because we don't have an opportunity to, to be there when they're in the cage, you know, down below and what's being said. But, you know, clearly it's a message of, we want you to drive the ball. We want you to work on increasing your exit velocity. We want you to hit the ball hard. We don't necessarily want to shorten up and just put the ball in play. But now I think we're getting some mixed messages, because that's something that Bruce Bochy has said here recently,
right,
that, you know, we kind of want to put the ball in play a little more. So I don't know where the vector is for this. If we're going to double down on everything is hit the ball far and hit the ball hard, or if we're going to, for certain hitters, try to mix in a different approach at two strikes and just make contact and put the ball in play so that we force the issues on the opposing defense and perhaps we get some more guys on base. Because that's the one thing right now that really is a problem is that so far this season, here we are, what's 35 games into the season?
Yeah.
We're 35 games into the season, and I think Wyatt Langford has had something like 11 or 12 at-bats we've been in scoring position, and Corey Seager's had something like 7 or 8.
Oh,
and
man.
I mean, you can't have that.
No.
These guys have got to be coming up with men on base on a fairly regular basis. And so whatever the club needs to do to have guys at the bottom of the order work at getting on base so that the guys at the top of the order can drive them in is where we need to be headed.
Do you feel bad at all for the starting pitching staff that I don't feel like we talk about how incredible they've been anywhere near as much, because we're also frustrated with the lack of production from the offense?
Hey, if before the season started, after we had acquired Patrick Corbin, and I told you at this point in the season Patrick Corbin would have a 3.2 ERA as your fifth starter,
oh my God,
you'd be like, ooh, we're going to be in first place,
yeah.
You know, before Cinco de Mayo. I mean, there's no question about it. And yet we're getting this kind of production from everybody in the rotation. And we've had a really good bullpen to this point. So, yeah, I think I feel sorry for these guys a little bit. Now, guys like Jacob deGrom and Nathan Eovaldi, for their careers, have been pitching great and have not gotten much in the way of run support. So I think they're probably – you know, used to this sort of thing. But, you know, collectively, you know, to have a team pitch as well as the Rangers have pitched and to be a game below 500 is definitely disappointing.
What have you seen from Tyler Mahle this year that has made him so overwhelming to people? Because I know people will say, like, he's a good pitcher or he was a good pitcher. I get all that. But with the injuries, you're like 4 years removed from like really top notch Tyler Mahle. So what is he doing this year that's got him so effective?
For me, I think, and I don't I don't think it's just one thing, but I think the thing that stands out is his ability to locate. For example, I think he's been a pinpoint when it comes to his splitter. And when you throw that pitch and you hear guys talk about throwing pitches that are strikes to balls, it looks to a hitter like it's going to be a strike. And for a good portion of its journey to home plate, it is, and then it dips below the strike zone. So you have hitters who have to determine when they're going to swing, and that ball isn't quite halfway to home plate, and their mind tells them, I'm swinging, because that's a strike, and then they launch into their swing, and all of a sudden the ball is below their bat. And for him to consistently be doing that with that particular pitch and to not be leaving that pitch up, I think is one of the big reasons why he's had the success he's had. And then it's, you know, and off of that then, it's locating all of his other pitches. He's really not leaving anything out over the middle of the plate. It's not like he's got a dominating fastball in terms of velocity, but he's able to spot both corners. He's able to throw that fastball a little bit above the zone when he's ahead on the count, and so he gets swings and misses there. And he's really confident. And, you know, if you get a guy that's locating like that and he has supreme confidence, you know, pitching with conviction, then you're going to get, you know, the kind of results that you see from Tyler. And I think the results that we've seen so far have exceeded what, you know, certainly expectation was.
Hixie, I got this question this morning, and I'm still trying to figure out my answer to it. But I'll ask you, what would you say would help this team the most, adding another power bat, adding a really good bat, or a dominant closer? Like, that was the conversation we had before the season. It was all bullpen, but I feel like right now a bat at some point would be the best thing.
Well, at this point in the season, I'd go with the bat.
Yeah.
Because we're in a stretch now where we're not given the back end of our bullpen an opportunity to even close games out. So a dominant closer right now is wasted on a team that's only scoring one or two runs a game.
Yeah.
So at this point, I'd say a dominant bat. But then once you get that dominant bat or once the offense is clicking, then obviously it becomes important to get somebody, you know, that can close at the back end. But we've seen all of these guys perform well at the back end. And so we know that, you know, Luke Jackson's had a couple of hiccups, but I think in general he's gotten the job done. And we've seen this from, you know, the others as well, Robert Garcia, Chris Martin, you know, Colby Milner has been fantastic.
Yeah.
Jacob Webb in spots has looked like a dominant pitcher. So I'm not so worried about those guys right now. But I think that, you know, if you're going to start making, you know, some kind of headway in the division and overall in the league, you have got to start putting up 4, 5, 6 runs a ballgame.
Now, Matt, we all know your bona fides when it comes to the Texas Rangers. Would you say you are well qualified to speak about minor league baseball as well?
23 and a half years in the minors? Yeah, I'd say so.
Perfect. Are you familiar with the television program Last Week Tonight with John Oliver?
One of my favorite shows, even though I have not been able to watch it, I'd say maybe in the last 2 months.
Okay.
Because I don't get a chance to watch much TV during the baseball season.
That's totally fair. Well, I'm going to catch you up with something that happened on this last episode.
I don't know where this is.
And I want to see if you would take advantage of this offer. So they did a kind of a subsection of the show when they talked about teams who rebranded, like the Chesapeake Oyster Catchers, which if you haven't seen that hat and that logo...
I've seen it.
All right. And so he talked about there's some boring teams that are just going along with the flow. And so what they offered is the opportunity to get a complete rebranding, including all the resources and stupidity of HBO. And they would come up with a new team name, mascot, personalized theme nights that match the city's history and spirit. They would give them plenty of publicity to hype up their merchandising. The only catch is that you can't ask any questions or give any notes along the way, and you have to go along with what they come up with. Now, knowing your history in minor league baseball and the publicity that would come along with this, would you make this deal?
Absolutely. No questions asked. Given the writers on that staff, and the stuff that they come up with on a weekly basis. You know, when I have an opportunity to watch the show, I'm usually in stitches. But, you know, they're also usually tackling very serious issues in our country, and are doing so with a real level of intelligence and wit, and making it, you know, palatable and humorous all at the same time. So they really do think of a lot, and they've invested money in a lot of the bits that they've done, you know, throughout the course of the life of the show. So I would say, I mean, that's publicity. I mean, they're not charging you anything.
No,
right?
It's free, but yeah, you just
absolutely
have to. Yes.
You would be crazy not to take up that offer.
So I actually got to go to the Blockbuster in Alaska where they shipped all the Russell Crowe memorabilia that they bought from his divorce settlement, which is amazing. But you talked about the serious nature of that show. This is a quote from the episode for John Oliver. I promise we will put just as much time, energy, and research into this as we do into exposing the dark underbelly of America's criminal justice system.
Yeah. So, I mean, how can you lose? How can you, just the publicity alone. Now, you know, I don't think, you know, they obviously know that, you know, you can't be, you know, there's a line probably that you can't cross, but it's last week tonight. They're going to go right to the line, aren't they?
Yes, yeah. Yes, they are. All right. Yeah. I'm glad that you confirmed my theory about that, because I'm with you. I would also just be like, yeah, why the hell not?
Yep. No question.
Thank you very much, good sir. Remember, if possible, stay on the line and get Alec to repeat to you your quote about the 8-man bullpen that I will never forget.
All right. Sounds good. Hey, by the way, guys, while we were talking here 5 minutes ago, the skies opened up. And it was pouring for about 5 minutes. It's been light rain here all day, and I would forecast whether we play or not tonight at about 50-50 right now.
Oh, no. As long as that Thursday game really gets rolling early.
That's what we really need to happen. Yeah, so. All right. Thank you very much, good sir. We'll catch you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Now, Corey. You looked up the Chesapeake oyster catchers.
And I sent a picture of it to my wife, who is a marketing person, and said, did they brand their team appropriately? And she said, no, what am I looking at? And I was like, all right, there you go.
Would you like to vaguely describe?
It is a baseball mitt.
Uh-huh.
It is also a half oyster shell.
Uh-huh.
As you would see the oysters as they are laying on the pile of ice when you're eating them.
Mm-hmm.
In said oyster shell does not look like the slimy thing that you usually eat out of the oyster. It looks like they left the pearl in there. And so it looks like the catcher's mitt is holding an oyster that has a pearl in it at the top of the pearl.
I cannot encourage you enough, if you don't see what's happening here,
it's hilarious.
Check out the logo for the Chesapeake oyster catchers. Now, without repeating anything he said, Alec, safe to assume that Matt Hicks remembers that quote about the bullpen now.
Yeah, I got a bunch of laughter, and he goes, now that you word it that way, yes, I 100% remember that.
Okay, and it is not necessarily radio-friendly. Now, we're going to get back to the Stars in just a second, but I feel like...
Let's give something away!
877-881-1053, caller number 10 is going to find out where the party at, because Nelly's coming to Dos Equis Pavilion on September 5th. You can buy tickets, of course, or you can win them for free right now. 877-881-1053. We'll be doing this ticket giveaway all week long. And in the meantime, Alec, can you give me that cut number 7, please?
Driving the net, Ranson, and he's got it!
You know, that's a good description from the 817. Oh, no, that's anatomy from the 817.
Oh, my gosh.
Did they know what that mouth do with the logo?
Oh, my gosh.
I don't even know what that is in reference to. And, Corey, this is a good question.
I don't know if we can answer.
On that logo, do you think the pearl is more sensitive than the rest of the oyster?
I don't know what you're doing right now. I don't think that.
I think you know exactly what I'm doing.
The logo doesn't feel, is what I'm going to say.
Okay.
The logo.
So.
Not a human or an animal.
You know.
The logo.
Look it up.
Hey, Kevin, do you want some Stars
yes.
conversation to go along with whatever we're about to do here?
We're about to talk about the Stars here.
All right.
That's why I play the Stars highlight.
Do you have some new information?
Go ahead. Give it to me.
Jason Robertson close to returning. DeBoer says they will see how he's feeling tomorrow morning after pregame skate.
In terms of maybe playing in game one?
That's where we sit there. Ooh. He also mentioned Colin Blackwell is likely not playing, so it seems things are leaning towards a robo return. All right, so let's go down a little bit further here. And this is Bruce Levine, by the way. I'm getting this information from. Miro Heiskanen skating on a pair with Matt Dumba. All other defensive pairings are the same. But this is where it gets really interesting, Kevin. And this is just, skate this morning. They're just having some fun. First line, Rantanen, Hintz, Granlin.
Okay.
Second line, Ben, Duchesne, Sagan.
Okay.
Third line, Robertson, Johnston, Marchment.
Oh, man, what a devastating third line that is.
And then the fourth line would be Dodonov, Steele, and Beck. Back, but that's a little bit of a mix-up there with those three lines.
And it's interesting because it makes sense. If you're ever going to mix something up, now would be the time when a player's returning. But I can't get over the fact, not saying that he can't play tomorrow, I can't get over the fact that Robo might be back before Miro.
Yeah, that was something that we weren't expecting either. So we'll rest on that just a little bit more. Again, they want to see how he's feeling tomorrow. He might wake up tomorrow and say, not there yet.
Yeah.
But even with DeBoer, though, when he's been asked about this, hey, with Miro, with this, how much of it is going to be player decision? You like to ask this question a lot. Like,
yes.
How
yes.
much of it? And he said, look, man, we have a lot of doctors that are involved in this thing, too. A lot of times there's medical purpose for that.
Sure.
Because players always want to be on the ice. They always want to be out there.
For the 817, I don't like splitting up Marchment, Sagan, and Duchesne.
Maybe this was just for practice.
Yeah.
Maybe this was just for some fun, but I'm just saying that that seems fun.
Now, I'm also excited about that prospect that you just brought up about Robertson coming back potentially for game one tomorrow. Now, you brought up this question in our show email, and I've been really fascinated by it. Like, I know we're not necessarily on the same side of this, but would you rather be the favorite or the underdog? Because we talked about this yesterday. This, to me, is a shocking shift in the betting odds. The Jets open as -115 and the Stars at -105. So, like, obviously not totally even, but a slight edge to the Jets. Very, very, very slight edge to the Jets. That has taken a huge shift with the Stars going to -170 and the Winnipeg Jets at +150. So that put the Stars from about like 48% likely to win to 63% likely to win. And that's because a ton of money came in on the Stars to win this series. So I know Brian Ray yesterday, he's like, hey, betting odds, not for me.
Right.
But
he said that multiple times. Yeah,
and I don't want to dismiss that. I just am fascinated by the shifts in the line and everything like that. That is a humongous shift off of just a day and a half of betting.
I'd be fascinated by those lines too, Kevin, if I was paying attention to my underdog, my Thunderdog.
That's right. Hey, I'm just saying, I posted a lot of these plays last night, hit another 10 to 1. 1, 2, 3, 4!
Count them.
In that play.
That's... Man, this is, I'm getting even more excited right now.
Is it because you're seeing all the feedback about that one logo?
Somebody said something. I wish I could say it, but it's.
Somebody said they ate oysters last night.
They said maybe it's because I'm a guy. Maybe they're not searching the right areas for it. Anyway.
So they can't find the logo. They think it might be made up or mythical.
Yeah.
I get what you're saying.
It's pretty real.
But yeah, I just went and read Brian Ray's quote. He's close. We'll see tomorrow morning. That's just. He's close. Sorry, I'm getting really excited about this game tomorrow night, Kevin.
As you should.
It's the thing I'm living for right now. Not even my kids.
Whoa, my gosh. What? Huh? That is a lot.
They understand.
What is the, do they? What is the excitement versus pressure? Because look, we talked about it.
To answer your question about, I like being under the radar. I don't like to be, you like to be the favorite.
I do.
You like to be the front runner and force people to chase. I love this idea that in that room, they're going, everybody out there thinks that we can't do it. But I don't know how people handle it whenever people say you can. You know, I don't know Some teams are bad. They're allergic to that success whenever they're at the top. We've seen the Cowboys. When they're the favorite, it seems like, guys, why aren't y'all better? Yes. You should feel like you're better.
Agreed.
And you said the other day, too, and I know we didn't get into this with Bochy, but you were like, I really want Bochy to walk into that clubhouse and remind them who they are.
Yes.
Remind those guys what they actually are. And every once in a while, when somebody tells you what you are, especially when it's your coach, you do feel like the front runner. And I do hope that they have that mentality of, we're the dogs that the Jets are trying to chase out here.
Now, this is an objectively hilarious text from the 817. I'm concerned about Hellebuck being an underdog since he knows more about goalkeeping than anyone ever. If you missed that,
oh my God.
Sean and RJ played it yesterday when Connor Hellebuck, I'm going to paraphrase, but it was something like, I feel like I've read or know more about goaltending than anybody. And it just was like, it was like, I'm not saying it's inaccurate. It's just the way he said it and the content of it. I was like, God, I want you to lose.
That's so. Connor Hellebuck.
No!
Oh, man.
All right. Ugh. So you like being the underdog. I do like being the favorite, but you're looking at a Stars team that, again, we talked about this earlier. They're tied for the favorite to win the Stanley Cup. But this still feels like a Stanley Cup or bust season. And I don't mean make it to the Stanley Cup Finals. I still think that will be a disappointment because you had back-to-back Western Conference Finals where you lost. And if you win this series, you're going to play one of those teams again in the Western Conference Finals. You go back 5 years, you were in the Stanley Cup Final, and you lost. I know it's amazing how far the Stars consistently get, but that's when you raise the expectations, right? And my expectations right now, and so are the bettors, that it's Stanley Cup or bust.
Just like kind of looking at this real quick, Kevin. Ben's an unrestricted free agent after this year,
yep.
I believe.
I bet they bring him back, but yes.
Granlund also is. Duchesne is. Dodonov is. Blackwell is. Cody Ceci and Brennan Smith. So those are just that part of that conversation. Yeah. I don't think Nil is going to panic. He doesn't seem like the dude that panics. He seems like he's just constantly trying to add to this thing.
I agree with
that.
And
then I love the line of why Mikko, and he said, well, it's where we are. And then it's also Mikko Rantanen.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we're a really good team and we're adding something that might put us over the top. I agree with you on that front of that they are driving for that or bust, but I don't think it would be after the season if it didn't happen that they would just be like, all right, let's strip it down and go do something else.
And part of the
reason he's been so patient along this way.
Well, and part of the reason is you listed all the players that are going to leave. That's not really like your young core.
Not at all.
And because with Rantanen and with some of the other deals that you've made, obviously they love to give out the 8-year contract. You have secured a lot of your younger core for a long time. So I also don't think they would blow it up.
Yeah, Mikko, Roope, Wyatt for a very long time.
And so you're not going to blow anything up, but I think you will chalk this season down as a disappointment. And I'm not saying that to be like, oh, what a crappy season.
I agree.
I think they will mark this season as a disappointment, even if they make it to the Stanley Cup Final and they lose.
Was it last year or the year before? At the end of everything, Jamie Benn was the last one. The video that we watched, Jamie, and he sat there and everybody left the locker room and he was the only one left. And you could just see on his face how much it affected him.
Because you don't know. Like, they're in a position to make a run. But when you're in that locker room right after it's over, you have no idea if this will ever happen again. Now, it might be because of you. It might be because of the team. It might be because of who the hell knows. But you have no idea if you're ever going to get that shot again.
Yeah, and whenever you hear DeBoer, and he's like, no, this does have a little bit of a special feeling to it. And you have Mikko kind of saying the same thing. Like, these guys, you can tell this group. All the guys in that room know what they're capable of. And know that they're when they step on the ice, they're the big dogs. They get it. So it is going to come down to whether or not they can pull that thing off. And they got to get through the Jets first. They got to get 100%. Through the Jets first before we can get there.
Now, something, if you don't love betting odds, I'm going to throw this out there if you believe in curses. The President's Trophy curse. For the past 11 NHL season, the winner of the President's Trophy, which is the team with the most regular season points, has failed to win the Stanley Cup. In fact, none of those 11 teams have even played for the Stanley Cup final, in the Stanley Cup final, and a huge percentage of them have been bounced by the end of the second round.
Okay.
So if you believe in hockey curses, that's rolling for us.
I'll take it.
For sure.
I believe in it for now.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for the C Block starring Corey Majors.
Quarterbacks that went picked very low. What was the excuse for those guys? Plus, a conversation about tunnels under the world. Next on The Fan.